Well, thank you, Chancellor Yang, and thank you, David and Yis. It's a great honor to give a talk here. I was somewhat nervous when Yis asked me to give a talk like that. It's unusual for mathematicians to talk in front of a lot of people who are not used to mathematics discipline, but I will try. So the title is Geometry, Its Charm and Applications. The main major theme I'd like to convey to you is that geometry is really center to all kind of branches of mathematics, from number theory to applied mathematics to physics. I'd like to start out from the history and then fill in what we have been doing in the last 20, 50 years. And of course, it's a biased statement about many things that we accomplished. So forgive me for being biased, especially to experts like Yis Singer. So let's start from Euclid. So we all know Euclid really start out as symmetricized geometry, and from then on, we can really draw a lot of important conclusions in geometry. And I consider it to be extremely important. In many cultures, for example, China, we never learn what axiom means, and as a result, we never develop geometry as it has been developed in the West. And this really stops the development. So Euclid's five axioms is simple and clear and obvious. In fact, Poincaré says the axiom of geometry are just definitions in disguise. And we make the definition, we develop according to what it is, and it's extremely rich. Any people who study high school geometry knows beautiful theorems that we can prove based on those five axioms. And a very important theorem in plane geometry is this famous theorem that we all learned in high school. So it's right angle triangle, we have c squared equal to a squared plus b squared. This of course is a foundation of Riemannian geometry, because infinitesimally we make use of this to be the definition of distance. Now, in many different cultures, including China, we all know 3, 4, 5, a, b, comma, c, define the right angle triangle. And so let's call this Pythagorean triple, A, comma, B, comma, C. Now I want to demonstrate a very simple thing like this has actually initiated a great deal of mathematics development in the past 2,000 years. So the Greeks already realized if you take A equal B equal to 1, then C is not a rational number, cannot be written as a ratio of two integers. So C is defined with square root of 2. And this is amazing that they realize it already. I think in many different cultures, they don't know it until much later. Now, this triple, when they are integers, we can actually find them by the simple formula like this. X squared minus y squared, 2xy, x squared plus y squared. You plug in x, y to be any integers, you found all the possible integer sources of this. This is known all the way in the old days, during the Greek time. So let's go. But on the other hand, there's a very beautiful problem which is still unsolved up to now. It's an important part of number theory I'd like to mention. Namely, we want to change the problem a little bit. Namely, instead of asking the size to be integers, we ask them to be rational numbers. Like what we just wrote down there, 3 over 2, 20 over 3, 41 over 6. The area, nonetheless, is an integer, namely 5. So the question is, which integer can be written as the area of a right angle triangle where the sides are all rational numbers? So this is called a congruent number. And until now, this problem is not solved. How to constructively classify all the integers which are congruent number, namely they are the area of a right angle triangle with rational size. This is a very beautiful problem which has been last more than 2,000 years, much longer than Fermat's theorem, in fact. In 1983, a mathematician by the name of Tunnell, assuming a very important outstanding conjecture called Birch-Springer-Dye conjecture, to find a method to decide which integer can be written as a congruent number. Namely, he proved that if you solve the first equation, 2x squared plus y squared plus xd squared equal to n, you found the number of solutions to be equal to twice the number of triples in the second one. If you can do that, then n is a congruent number. Notice this is a finite problem, can be done by computer, because x, y, and c are integers, and they only find numbers also like that. So this is an important question. The procedure that Mr. Tunnell did it was to observe that if the triangle has x, y, and c to be the size, it satisfies an equation like y squared equal to x cubed minus n squared x. There are infinite number of rational numbers solving this equation once you find one. And this is called elliptic curve. And this elliptic curve forms a group, and the group has become extremely important in later development in number theory. And also, amazingly, in geometry, and also in the modern theory of string theory, which is an example of what we call Calabi-Yau manifolds. In fact, this pencil or elliptic curve will come up again and again. Okay. So this is basically the way that it comes in. There's attached to the elliptic curve, there's something called L function, and you want to show that the L function vanishes at some point, and this turns out to relate to something called theta function. So I won't. This is an example of how a simple geometric figure gets into number theory, and the number theory demonstrates a beautiful surface. It's a Riemann surface called elliptic curve, and the elliptic curve nowadays come back to geometry and even come back to physics, to string theory. And of course, elliptic curve is not only appear in string theory, but also it appear in condensed matter physics and several many different subjects. So it goes all the way from ancient days, 2,000 years ago, to now. Then there's a platonic solid, which already appeared in Euclid's book. Euclid discussed what kind of regular polyhedrons can appear. So regular polyhedrons are those with faces, identical regular polygons, and the same number of faces at each vertex. Euclid proved in his book there are only five of them. These are the pictures that you see here. And this, of course, famous that Kepler tried to use it to demonstrate how the universe was composed. He was not quite right, of course, on that, but on the other hand, it's nevertheless a beautiful mathematics, and it has been influenced mathematics all the way up to now. In fact, it's related to modern theory of complex singularity, of complex varieties, and also is related to so-called Calabi-Yau manifolds by resolving singularity suitably. So although it has not been used in the sense of Kepler to solve the problem for the planets, it still appears again and again. And in fact, you look at these five polyhedrons. You see the number of faces, the vertices, and the edges. You count it, you have this 4, 4, 6, 6, 8, 12, 8, 6, 12, and all this. You observe there's a duality among them. See 6 and 8 interchange, and 12 and 20 interchange. And this is an interesting duality among the platonic solids, which appear in mathematics, in geometry later. Now, this Euler number relates to the platonic solid. You observe that the number of vertices minus number of edges plus number of faces are equal to 2 always among the five solids. This is a simple observation, and yet it's extremely important is discovered by Euler, that if you take a closed surface, you deform it a closed polyhedron with number of vertices V, number of edges to be E, and number of faces to be F, then V minus E plus F is 2 times 1 minus H, where H is number of handles. So for the sphere, H is equal to 0, there's no handles, so V minus E plus F is equal to 2. So 2 times 1 minus H is called an Euler number. So Euler number, these are pictures for the possible Euler numbers, you can see. So the first one is genus equal to 1, Euler number equal to 1. The second one is Euler number equal to 2. And the third one is Euler number equal to 3. So number of handles 1, 2, and 3. So on the top, of course, we make it to be more mathematical. But on the bottom, you see it in the day-to-day life. You see a teapot, you see all this. The symmetry, concept of symmetry, you know, coming from regular polyhedrons, from tiling, from geometric patterns, has been one of the most important concepts in the history of geometry. It also appears in physics in many different disciplines. And in fact, crystals in solid state physics are classified according to their symmetric groups. And these are influenced all the way in the old days with our desire to study patterns. Now immediately, we get into something called Gauss-Bonnet formula. We mentioned V minus E plus F is equal to the Euler number. If we assign a number to each vertex, we can assign a concept of curvature, and the curvature at that point is just 2 pi minus the angle of the faces with vertex at that point. So the excess of the number of angle there. And then it turns out we sum them up, or sum up all this curvature at each vertex is equal to 2 pi chi. And put it in more general form, is this formula on the bottom, integral k is equal to 2 pi times the Euler number. So k is a curvature, the integral is just a sum when we discretize it. The left-hand side is the sum of the curvature, and the right-hand side is the Euler number. And this is an amazing formula relating curvature with the topological invariant. And this is the type of formula which relates on the left-hand side a geometric information, on the right-hand side a topological data, is extremely important for modern geometry and modern physics. So in physical literature, you see the concept of topological charge, you see the concept of topological defects in solid state physics and many other subjects, not just in string theory. And this very basic concept in the modern terms are based on Chern classes. And of course, Chern was the first one really understand the Gauss-Bonnet theorem in a modern way. And he generalized it to relate to many different concepts, topological concepts, which is fundamental for fiber bundle. And this great generalization was achieved by Atiyah Singer, who of course is sitting here, Mr. Singer. And this is extremely important and influence not only in geometry, but also in analysis and also in modern physics. And this is a cornerstone for the modern geometry. Of course, being back in the Greek times, astronomy already used geometry to make measurement of many things, like the diameter of the Earth. And the desire to make astronomical measurements has greatly influenced the development of geometry and trigonometry. And it's similar. Nowadays, the physics, fundamental physics, has greatly motivated the development of geometry also. So now we cook. In the old days, already all the Greek physicists has already trying to understand and also puzzled by the beauty of geometry. So Galileo would say that she would follow the advice of Plato and start with mathematics before he understand geometry, before he understand physics. Yeah. And during the Renaissance period, you see the great deal of development in geometry. And so I don't want to go through one by one. These are all extremely fundamental development. Without this development of all these people I put in here, it's impossible to see a modern development of geometry. So Isaac Newton put it, and it's still puzzling to me, myself, and I guess to many people, it's a glory of geometry that from so few principles, fetched from without, is able to accomplish so much. Not only in mathematics, but also in physics and other subjects. So let's start to talk about modern development of geometry and topology. So, of course, Euler is one of the greatest topologists, founder of Euler number and combinatoric geometry. And also, he studied calculus of variation, which is also extremely important. And also, he started out to relating geometry with mechanics, and he also studied minimal surfaces. And Gauss has done a great deal. And the most important one, I think, is the intrinsic definition of the Gauss curvature, which I want to demonstrate now. So Gauss defined and observed what the curvature means in a very intrinsic manner. So I want to demonstrate what is curvature means. So Gauss found a concept of curvature which depends only on the intrinsic nature of the metric, not on the way it sits in this in the free space. For example, a piece of paper, the curvature is zero. We can bend it around and form a cylinder. It's still the same surface, and yet the way they sit in free space is different. And let us demonstrate a more non-trivial situation. Here we have a catenoid where the color means curvature, different levels of the curvature. We cut it open and we bend it around, you see a different surfaces. So we cut it open. This is the catenoid, you see, I cut it along, and then I bend it, and then I form a different surface, which is a helicoid. And in between, the Gauss curvature is the same. You see, in the first picture and second picture, we draw the level set of the curvature. They're all the same in between, no change. So what does that mean? That means if we do not tear out the surface and stretch it, the concept of the curvature is a deformation invariant. So that since the work of Gauss, we understand there are two possible types of geometry. One is related to the intrinsic metric, and the other one is the extrinsic way that may have two different principal curvatures, which we don't demonstrate here. Let's go. Yes, so Gauss really should be considered to be the founder of Riemannian geometry, which will be discussed later. But it's interesting, even in that old days, Gauss made this following comment. I'm becoming more and more convincing that the necessity of our geometry cannot be proved, at least not by human reason, nor for human reason. Perhaps in another life we'll be able to obtain insight into the nature of space, which is now unattainable. Until then, we must place geometry not in the same class with arithmetic, which is purely a priori, but with mechanics. So I think we are facing the same question now with the modern physics demanding that we have to enlarge the concept of geometry. And it's amazing that Gauss in 200 years ago also feel in the same way. When you just start to understand what intrinsic definition of curvature means, you start to feel that geometry must have something deeper inside. And of course, in Gauss' time, mechanics means physics. So then, of course, then right afterwards, there's Riemann. Riemann introduced the concept of Riemannian geometry, where he take an abstract approach to geometry, so space is no more embedded into Euclidean space. It is a dictated by a way that we measure distance in an abstract manner. Now, infinitesimally, this is Euclidean geometry, but this is only up to first order accuracy. The second order accuracy is measured by curvature tensor associated to the metric. And this immediately gives a revolution of geometry. There are many people develop the concept of calculus on such abstract space. And this has played a very important role. So now, at the same time, Riemann was very interested in the concept of complex function of one variable. And he found out in two dimensions, there's something very special in two dimensions, that every metric can be written in this form when you choose a special coordinate. So you choose a different coordinate system, you can simplify the way you write a metric. It looks like f times dx squared plus dy squared. And if you introduce a complex number, x plus iy, then you can even write that metric in this form, f times dc times dc bar. This is a very important way to write the metric. And this is called Riemann surface. Now I want to demonstrate how this important concept is useful for application. So I'm talking about application in many different levels. I'd like to demonstrate here an application of conformal parameters that I just mentioned to okay. So what happens here, you see some pictures of some, well, teapot, a bunny, and a minimal surface. What happens is that if you take a camera, a 3D camera, which is possible to be done nowadays, a camera, you take a picture, three-dimensional picture of a bunny like this. Nowadays you can take a very good picture with good scan. Now what you get is about, say, a million points in space. The camera provides a million points. A million points is not so useful if you don't know how to deal with it. You want to treat it so that you understand this picture. And this has many applications to many different things. I will mention how it's useful. So I used with David Gu and Yalin here, we apply the concept of conformal parameterization that I just mentioned. I said the distance can be written as some function times dx squared plus dy squared. The x coordinate and the y coordinate are exactly those squares that you see. The x coordinate and the y coordinate. You see, these are orthogonal net on the surface. Orthogonal, because the metric gives rise to orthogonal net. And this is a very useful information for computer geometry, which has never been done before. People use a triangulation, which is very messy, complicated one. We were able to make use of the concept of geometry, conformal geometry, to change the parameterization in such a beautiful form. You need a lot of calculation, but nevertheless, you can make it to look very nice. Now, what's the point of doing this? The point is that this is a very important parameterization. If you have two different surfaces, you triangulate it, you have many different points, you have to match them together. This gives you a very good way to match them together. It's a very canonical way to match them together. So let's do a demo about a morphing. These are two pictures. One is a picture of a woman on the left-hand side. One is a picture of a man, this guy. Now, in the old days, when you do a morphing, that means you want to change one picture of one man to another one. You have to use a lot of labels. You put them together, put some feature points and really a lot of labor to change the picture from one to another one. But the fact we can use a parametrization using conformal map helps us to do it. So let's take a look at this picture. Let's change from one to another one. You can see we are moving the man's picture to the woman. The reason we can do it is because these two pictures downstairs is a parametrization of the upstairs picture in a very canonical conformal way. So the matching is very good matching. We can do it by machine without using hand. And this is thank you to the fact that there's a good canonical way to parameterize surfaces. Now I should say that this actually depends on solving some nonlinear partial differential equations and quite a complicated way, not trivial to do. But yet we can carry it out because we understand the equations and all that. Now, in terms of the complex coordinate, in terms of conformal parameter that I just mentioned to you where we can draw those nice pictures, the curvature has a beautiful formula. Namely, if F is a coefficient for the metric, curvature can be written in that form. And we can generalize this concept to much higher dimension, and this is called a complex manifold. And Lehmann surface is what we call one-dimensional complex manifold because of only one complex parameter. So for the picture we saw is a Lehmann surface, and Lehmann surface is beautiful, and it has this structure automatically, namely the complex metric, complex geometry associated to it. And this fact is very important. When you have a conformal structure like what we just described, and when it's compatible with the metric, such a complex structure or such coordinate system can be called supersymmetry. It's a baby version of supersymmetry that appears in string theory. So in high dimension, we have a complex structure which is compatible with the metric, give rise to something called supersymmetry. And of course, we hope that supersymmetry can be found in the lab, and then a lot of people will get Nobel Prize. But still, it's a beautiful, outstanding, interesting mathematical question. And so here is an important question. Suppose I have a coordinate system given by the conformal chart. So in the face, you see, or on a teapot, you see this conformal grid, orthogonal grid. And suppose I give you the function, the curvature, how it deforms. The very interesting question is, how do we discover the metric itself? So let me repeat the question. Given the face, what we just said, is with some coordinate parametrization, and also given the concept of curvature to you, we want to reconstruct the surface. This is a primitive version of the Calabi conjecture. Let's go. So for example, let's take this surface. This is the face of a man, which we do the calculation. So on the left-hand side, this is the conformal grid that I put on your surface. So the question is, suppose I give this grid and also the curvature, I want to reconstruct this face of a man. These are useful for many purposes. For example, for the question of facial recognition. On the middle is a picture you take of a man where we write down how the curvature looks like. It takes a great deal of numerical calculation to draw the curvature function on the face. You see on the nose, you see a very positive curvature, and these are levels of the curvature. It takes a non-trivial calculation to achieve such a calculation. And on the right is a nose. We expand the nose only. Now what's the point? If you take a picture of a criminal, say, in the middle, and if you found his nose only, just a picture of his nose, you can match the nose with the face. And this is extremely accurate matching because we put in all the geometry inside. And an important point is that the curvature concept is a deformation invariant. Even if you change the nose a little bit, by moving around your nose, the curvature should be basically the same. So this gives you, except you do surgery. You should be able to match the right hand side to the middle one. And so you can do a facial recognition in that way. Now let's go. So curvature in high dimension is much more than a scalar function. It's a tensor, what we call. It depends on how we look at the section of the space. We can cut the space into many directions, and we have a concept of curvature in each direction. Now, if we extract some part of the information for the full curvature tensor, we get a small tensor called Ricci tensor. So Ricci tensor is a very important tensor that occurs in high dimension. And we take a trace of this tensor, it's called a scalar curvature. So in space-time, in dimension bigger than 2, we have a way to measure how space curves. We only take some part of it. That part of it is called Ricci tensor, and the trace of it is called scalar curvature. So now, the famous equation of Einstein is to equate this part of the curvature, the part that I told you to extract out, namely the Ricci tensor and the scalar curvature, to be written by this equation. Rij minus R over 2 times Gij equals Tij. The right-hand side Tij is called a metal tensor. The left-hand side is a description of the gravity of space-time. So space-time is now written in terms of geometric language by Einstein with the help of several mathematicians. It combines gravity, which is on the left-hand side, with matter on the right-hand side. And this is a highly nonlinear theory. Einstein's equation has been the greatest inspiration for geometers in the last whole century, and the inspiration is still going on. So we need to solve this equation. So given a right-hand side, which is given by matter, for example, if you have some electricity and magnetism, you can put it on the right-hand side, and then you try to understand what Gij is. And that tells you what gravity looks like. So now this space-time has, I give you one demonstration how Einstein equation has inspired many works in geometry. So this one was brought in by Singer to us in 1973, I think, 74. And the point is, the equation is highly nonlinear, the most nonlinear equation in physics, I think. And in physics, you want to discuss about conserved quantities, like angular momentum, linear momentum, and mass. But most of the definition was based on symmetry. And yet, because the field is nonlinear, there's no symmetry involved in such a space-time. Einstein's space-time has no symmetry in general. So it's difficult to even define the concept of mass, momentum, or angular momentum. But in case the system is isolated, near infinity, the space-time is close to flat, and there's symmetry there. And this has some kind of symmetry, asymptotic symmetry. This gives rise to the definition of total mass, total momentum, and total angular momentum. And a big question is to see whether this definition fits with the intuition of physics. And this important question was brought to us, as I said, by Singer when he got Robert Garros to give a talk in Stanford. And namely, we were asked to try to prove that the definition given by Einstein, the total mass should be positive. And this becomes a very interesting question that Rick Strand and I spent quite a lot of work on it. And finally, in 1977, when I visited Berkeley, in fact, Singer was there too at that time, we finally understand it and solve it completely. And interesting enough, we use the concept of minimal surface. This which goes back to Euler. And later, Ed Witten using a concept of supergravity and Dirac equation also understand how to solve it. So there are two different approaches for these rather fundamental questions. And this whole theory has been important for geometers because as a result, the concept of manifolds with positive scalar curvature has been fundamental in many geometric questions. Now, I'm always intrigued by Einstein equation all the way since I was a graduate student. Besides this problem, there's another problem that makes me excited about. If I take a space-time when there's no matter, so Tij equals zero, when there's absolutely no matter, the question is, can we find a closed universe where there's no matter and yet there's gravity, non-trivial gravity? So put it into the concept of geometry, that means you want the Ricci tensor that I defined earlier to be identical to zero, and yet the full curvature tensor is not identical to zero. So it's non-trivial in that sense. So there's no matter and yet there's gravity. So this is a rather important question, both in the sense of Lorentzian geometry and also Euclidean geometry, actually. Now it turns out when the space has supersymmetry, namely, you have this concept of conformal grid that I mentioned, generalized to high dimension, becomes a complex structure, the problem is somewhat easier. So this is the Calabi conjecture. So both my two works are motivated by relativity, really. And the metric has a complex structure or has this supersymmetry, can be written in that form. And there's a very important quantity which is created from this metric. And this is a very important concept created by S.S. Chen, my teacher, and this is called the first Chen class of the space. So the Ricci tensor that I mentioned becomes a first Chen class. The first Chen class is a topological invariant. And so in order for the space-time to have no matter, the first Chen class must vanish. That's the basic point. So let's go. So the point is that when we have supersymmetry on space-time, we can translate the question of whether you have a vacuum solution for Einstein equation to a problem of algebraic geometry. And in between, I need to solve an equation, a nonlinear equation. This part of the conjecture of Calabi. And I mentioned to you before, there's a different forms of it. One is that given a conformal grid and given the curvature, how do you recover the metric? Here is a different form for it. And the elliptic curve that I mentioned earlier, which was used to understand this problem of congruent number, y squared equal to x cubed minus n squared x, is a Calabi space, which is a space where there's no matter, and yet there's gravity. Well, in this case, there's no gravity also. And the Platonic solid, which we mentioned above, can be associated to some of this space also, which I would not go into detail. So two different things went back to engine times, actually shows up again. Now, I mentioned one more thing, which is which comes up from the concept of string theory, which gives rise to solve some rather old problems in algebraic geometry. This is only a special case. So this is a quintic polynomial. You look at this polynomial with five unknowns. This is a very well-known Calabi space. It's a space defined by polynomial in the first line. The question has been to find a map to solve this equation by using rational functions. And we want to count the number of solutions of such an equation. It turns out the The modern theory of string theory give rise a way to solve it, which is spectacular. And this solution was predicted by Candelas and his company and motivated by string theories in a very non-trivial way. And we had a seminar on this subject in 1990 in Berkeley, where Singer organized. And turns out this has a great influence in the last 12, 13 years, a deep influence in mathematics. So this very question was finally recognized and solved. So let's go. So these are things related to relativity and string theory. But of course, mathematics by itself is important. And the Calabi conjecture has many other applications. A very important statement, this is for algebraic geometry. I prove that if you have an algebraic space, a space which is defined by algebraic polynomials, if such a space can be deformed to a linear space, then this space must be a linear space itself. This is a very famous question due to an Italian geometer called Savelli. And so far, there's no other proof except by using this kind of method. So it's rather amazing that analysis can go rather far. And the fundamental inequality was involved is to prove this inequality, which is fundamental in understanding four-dimensional manifold, especially algebraic surfaces. And this has been an important inspiration for many developments in algebraic geometry and also in topology. Now, I want to introduce another important development in the 20th century, motivated by fluid dynamics and Maxwell equations. Several Greek geometers, Eric Cartan, Durham, Hodge, Kolaira, has developed the theory of harmonic forms. The motivation is to link analytic part of space to global topology. And this has been extremely powerful tool due to all these gentlemen. And an example is that on a closed surface, which you can see by computer graphic here, each handle which gives rise to a topology give rise to something called holomorphic one form. And this concept has been old and 100 years old. We use this concept to do a computer graphic based on it. And this is new, actually, and computer geometers do not know yet. So for a picture like this, for example, for a teapot, where you have one handle, we were able to use holomorphic one form to draw a picture on the right-hand side. Now, this is a rather interesting thing to do for computational geometry. You see, you have grids on the left-hand side, rather irregular, for example, this one. There are two different kinds of grids. But after computation, we get down to the same conformal grid on the right-hand side. So, despite you can get the input from different way, as far as you are on the same object, you get the same way of conformally parametrization of the teapot here. This is very important because you can use this to identify two different objects, as I said before. You use different calculation and yet you get the same identification. Second of all, if you look at this picture, this very important thread comes in. In the handle, you can see the grids are much more refined than others. And this is a blessing because in numerical calculation, in partial differential equation and other things, you would like to see the grids are automatically refined near the points where the curvature is large. And turns out this automatically gives to you. Near those handles where it's thin, the grids are automatically very small. It was done in a very smooth manner. And this is important for calculation. And also, more importantly, In many calculations, including car manufacturing and many other objects, they use something called supply approximation. Supply approximation is trying to smooth out those points. But when they do it, they have to match it together, and usually along the matching, there's discontinuous. Here, the global geometry gives you one big piece with no matching problem. So it's all smooth out. Okay. So the development of Hodge theory gives fundamental analytic truths in algebraic geometry. I've only used less than 1% of the Hodge theory in the simplest case to do the computer geometry. And this already, I think, is quite an interesting input into computational geometry. But in terms of mathematics, you see the Riemann-Roch formula, a Tiersinger index formula. All this has become extremely important for algebraic geometry and for quantum field theory. And conversely, quantum theory and quantum field theory have been the most important inspiration in the past 30 years for geometry. It's amazingly that it works so well, in fact. And besides those things, we have Young-Mills theory, which is brought in nonlinear theory in another aspect of geometry. And Donaldson, based on Young-Mills theory, solved some very important problem in four-dimensional manifolds. And there are several things on Hermitian-Young-Mills connection, which has been an important tool for algebraic geometry. And there's some of the nonlinear differential equation has become fundamental in modern geometry. So mean curvature flow, harmonic maps, rigid flow, and the supersymmetric version of these equations, which brought in by string theories. So nonlinear theory has been developed very well when we understand the linear theory. But we don't understand hyperbolic theory too well at this moment. String theory has unified most of these approaches in the last 15 years. And the effectiveness of quantum field theory in geometry is rather a deep mystery to me, why it works so well. And also, the fact that differential equation, nonlinear differential equation, is capable to produce deep results in a completely different subject like algebra, algebraic geometry, is equally mysterious to me. As I work on this problem for a long time, I give estimates, I solve the equation in a sense that I prove it exists, but I do not know why it works eventually, and it works. And I do not see the metric and all that explicitly, and yet it gives powerful tool for the geometry. So this is a very important concept that we need to pursue. The geometry, as far as I'm concerned, has been really the important center of all this development. Perhaps we can feel the concept of geometry intuitively. We can visualize it. We can do all kinds of things with it. And so I think this makes geometry to be the best language for the universe. And I can see that in this century, we will see all these subjects that we mentioned to be all mixed up, and we could not tell the difference between all this, and it should be fundamental to the future development. So I put it in the following way. So there are important disciplines from physics get into fundamental physics. There are Newtonian mechanics, quantum physics, general relativity, and several of them. And based on geometry and equations, we can explain phenomena. And it also, at the same time, enriched the geometrical concepts that we put in. And this, finally, we really go back to fundamental physics again. I think this is a very good, important cycle that we should observe. And then the application of fundamental principle should, through the complex calculus of mathematics, go to applied science and go to many different kind of engineer phenomena. And I should say that engineering questions are rather exciting to me too, because some of these questions does give rise to some rather universal methods. We can use it and then apply it back to fundamental principle. For example, the computer graphic we do, it does give rise to some questions that I like to understand, which when I do not work on it, I did not realize. So how to present a picture nicely has been a very useful fact for me. So let's. So I should, on the other hand, let me mention this concept of Horn Poincare. Poincare, of course, is more interesting in how to apply mathematics to the whole, to physical world, but it's rather interesting to see what he says. I do not hesitate to say that mathematics deserves to be cultivated for its own sake, and that the theories of not admitting applications to physics deserve to be studied as well as others. Mathematics is a beautiful subject by itself. We look for beauty, we look for truth, and it should be a subject on its own right. So I hope this last sentence I mentioned, mathematics can develop on its own right, and it could come into a completely exotic and completely different kind of object than physicists or other people would like to say. Thank you.